This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think, we have great guys in the system, and, you know, we have great players, and, you know, trust in the management and coaching staff, and, we'll make up for them.
Right. Yeah, there's some people who might look and say, oh, the Jets window is somehow closed or it's not as open as it was. Do you believe that?
No, we're going to be a good team for sure.
That was Kyle Connor from earlier this summer. That was the clip I alluded to back in the first hour of the program where he sort of, you know, chuckles and says, no, this is going to be a good hockey team. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Again, just in case you're just joining us, maybe you haven't looked at your phone, maybe you're not on Twitter, that sort of thing, that would be healthier for you. The Winnipeg Jets have re-signed restricted free agent goaltender Eric Comrie. It's a two-year contract for Comrie. It is worth $1.4 million over the 2 years, so $700,000 per season. It's a two-way deal in the first year. It's a one-way deal in the second year. What that means, of course, is that the Winnipeg Jets will pay him a different salary at the AHL level this year than they would at the NHL level. But it's also, again, worth pointing out that he will still have to clear waivers if/when the Winnipeg Jets send him down to the Manitoba Moose.
It's kind of like this show. Like, Dave gets paid in real money. I get paid in Canadian Tire money.
Okay.
It's true.
Is it?
No.
Oh.
Okay. Although, if that's an option, I'm going to go to Canadian Tire, use the money I would pay Ezzy,
yeah,
and then I could just buy myself some stuff with Ezzy's, very fulsome salary.
Well,
and
your old house had that backyard aquarium thing. Do you have one at your new house?
Yeah, I have a pond, if that's what you're asking.
You have a pond at the new house?
It's not called a backyard aquarium, for the record, but it's called a pond, but yes.
Okay. I don't think I've ever heard anybody call a pond a backyard aquarium.
Yeah, well, neither have I.
Let's be honest. Earlier in the show, I completely forgot my train of thought in the middle of what I was saying. So the fact that I'm still speaking, you know, legibly somewhat at 10:40 in the morning isn't so bad,
you know,
at
Drew,
this point.
This isn't like 5 or 6 years ago. Like, we each have two kids now.
Yeah, you bring that up every show.
Well, I've only had two kids for 3 weeks,
that's
first
true,
of all.
I know.
So, but when we're talking about, you know, hockey and everything like that, are you surprised that we're losing our train of thought? We're getting old, man. And the reality is, I don't even know what day of the week it is most of the time.
Well, it's Saturday. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That's why I said most of the time.
Okay, fair enough. There you
Saturdays,
go.
I know what day it is, but I mean, on Wednesday, I thought it was Friday. Like, I don't know what's going on. I'm changing diapers all the time.
His own included.
There you go.
My son, by the way, likes to take
here we
a,
go.
He likes to go to the bathroom right after I change him. I don't know if your kids did that.
Yeah, I think that's a thing that most kids, like, you got to make sure he's, you know, that, you know, they're done before you go for a change. There's nothing worse than doing the double change back to back.
I would actually disagree. I would say there's nothing worse than listening to you talk about these two things.
You guys ever use the PPTP, Drew?
All right.
Okay. Let's move on. Thank you, Ezra. You can take the rest of the segment off. Kyle Connor, you know, we talked a lot of talk about him, of course, as one of the Jets' two remaining RFAs now that Comrie has signed. Is he ready to take a leadership role on this team in terms of a forward line? Is he ready to be a driver on the forward line? The perception exists that he's sort of been that third on the line with Scheifele and Wheeler. Is he ready to step up? Paul Maurice was effusive in his praise about Kyle Connor recently. Thank you.
Yep.
Talking about how everybody loves playing with Kyle Connor because he's so effective. That this is, you know, Paul Maurice's quote. His effectiveness is what makes players love playing with him so much. You know, does that mean he's ready to take another role and take another step in his development and be a driver on a forward line in your mind, Dave?
When I watched, you know, Kyle Connor play in college, you just see the pureness of this kid's skating. And I think that, to me, the one aspect of his game that he really needed to work on is not the offensive game. It was really the defensive element. I think, you know, from that perspective, and I think it's not just Kyle Connor, I think a lot of players could use that ability is really just adding that to their repertoire. It really is important to, and I talked about it earlier in one of the segments, this idea of a commitment to team defense, and that if you're managed to obviously get back, get that puck, get it back, you know, support your D, get the puck out, you're going to have more offensive chances anyway. So, you know, you're helping the team twofold. So I think that was one of the things. I mean, oftentimes Kyle Connor, don't get me wrong, has speed to burn, has offensive skills that are unbelievable. And again, like, I think he's got one of the best shots probably on the team. But again, I think defensively is the aspect of his game that needs to catch up to the offensive part of his game. So for me, if you're going to say, can he drive a line? Well, I think offensively, absolutely he could. But I mean, again, we know in the NHL, it's more than just being a good offensive player. You have to be, you know, a defensive player. I know we tend to allow wingers to kind of get away with not being as defensive as centers, but at the end of the day, you still need to be able to get back and defend. And I think that's the element. If you're asking me about Kyle Connor's game, and if you're asking me specifically if he's going to be a driver, then it has to be you're a driver in all aspects of the game, not simply in one, because offensively, there's no question he can drive. It's a function of his collective game. So to me, if the defensive aspect of his game is improved, then I think there's no question he can be a driver.
Yeah, and it's definitely been improving over the last 2 years. I agree with you, Dave, and you know that's why it goes back to what we were talking about last segment, you know, breaking up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. Well, Connor might be broken up from either one or both of those guys as well, and you know, I kind of threw it out there that maybe you see like an All-American line, like a Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, and a Blake Wheeler as your second line, right? And I like that because Andrew Kopp is a very good defensive player, and it really comes back to, you know, the possession numbers. And I think, Drew, the reason why Connor is often kind of looked at as the third wheel, even though if he's a third wheel, he's a really good third wheel, is because Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler are two of the best offensive players in the entire league, you know, let alone the Jets, right? So I think, you know, that's something that's going to be really interesting to watch here, guys, over the next couple of weeks, you know, in training camp, into the preseason, into the early part of the season, because, you know, you look at Kyle Connor and, you know, we know the offensive game is there, but I think the Jets want him to become a better all-around player. And I think they want a few guys to become better all-around players. I mean, Jack Roslovic also drafted in that 2015 first round. I mean, that's another guy that, you know, they obviously want him to take the next step offensively, but they also want him to round out his game and show Paul Maurice wants him to show him, that's a little bit awkward, but Paul Maurice wants Roslovic to show him that he is a responsible defensive player, and he can put him out there in those defensive situations. And, you know, not to say that Roslovic or Connor are bad defensive players, because they're not, but if you look at the numbers, you know, they're pretty average as far as, you know, the possession goes, shot share and everything like that. But when you're talking about, you know, this team and specifically Connor, I mean, the Jets are going to need a lot of players to step up their games. I mean, you're going to need Christian Vesalainen, you know, to figure out the NHL game sooner rather than later. You're going to need, you know, other players that simply maybe had down years and you need them to elevate their game. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers to me was still good last year, but certainly, you know, kind of tailed off towards the end of the season like a lot of players did. So Paul Maurice is going to need Nikolaj Ehlers as well to kind of round out his game. So, you know, some players are going to have to sacrifice a little offense. Mark Scheifele might be one of those guys, and, you know, Blake Wheeler might be one of those guys, especially if he's playing on a quote-unquote younger line, right? And that would be with, you know, Andrew Kopp, even though he's not much younger than Mark Scheifele. But the point is, I think Kyle Connor, you can't necessarily say that he's going to be the driver of a line like Scheifele or Wheeler. Like, you can say Scheifele and Wheeler can drive lines, but I don't know if you can say that about Kyle Connor. Doesn't mean that he's not an amazing player, because as you guys both know, I'm a big fan of his, and I know that, you know, most of us are. But the point is, I think you can't necessarily just say that, you know, Connor is going to be on that top line and he's going to be the guy that we kind of build that line around.
You know, and as to the point of that you just made a few seconds ago about players having to maybe take a step back in terms of individual play, I think the reality is you don't want to look back on your career and say, wow, in 2019-20, I had 90 points, but we got eliminated or we didn't make the playoffs. The fact is that if your money is already set, you know, and some guys are fighting for contracts, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But if your money is set, especially a lot of the players now after this year, once Laine and Connor are done, for the most part, at least this year will be pretty set in terms of, you know, obviously, like you guys talked about Roslovic and stuff like that. But for the most part, you're going to have
your salary structure.
So, you know, that is established. At that point, you can kind of take a step back. You don't have to worry about performing in that regard. Now it's really more about the team. And, you know, it's interesting because Nikolaj Ehlers is in Chicago right now doing the NHL media tour. Yeah. And so he was talking, and Frank Saravalli put out a tweet, and I put it on the website yesterday because I thought it was interesting. Ehlers went back and watched every shift he took in 62 games last season. And he just talked about the things that he needs to work on to improve his game. Mm-hmm. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I think Nikolaj Ehlers is by far, in my mind, the most exciting player to watch on this team.
But I read on the internet that he was being traded for 3 bags of pucks and 4 sticks.
I mean, when you have a guy who's that dynamic and on a contract that good,
yeah.
I just don't understand that kind of talk. But when we've talked about that earlier in the summer.
Yeah.
But I mean, but he talked about the details that he needs to work on. So I think if you've got players that are committed, I mean, again, Ehlers, while there's the rumor talk and all that nonsense, he's focused on what he can do to improve to be a better player for this team. And I think that if you get that kind of buy-in from every guy on this team, then collectively as a group, regardless of, and Scheifele talked about it, I don't care what line I'm on, as long as the team is having success. I think that sort of attitude, and again, like I said, the us against the world mentality is going to serve this Jets team well in 2019-20.
When we come back, Clayton Keller signed a significant contract extension with the Arizona Coyotes. What does that contract extension mean for Kyle Connor and his negotiations with the Jets? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
All right, Clayton, you signed an 8-year contract extension with the team today. How excited are you to be committed to Arizona long term?
Yeah, really excited. We have a great group of guys here, and I love playing here, so it's awesome to get that done and know that I'm going to be here for 8 more years. It's an unbelievable feeling, and I can't wait to get going this year.
It's good that he likes to play there. He's just signed there for another 8 seasons. If he didn't like playing there, I'd hope he wouldn't sign there. That's Clayton Keller of the Arizona Coyotes. As I mentioned, signing a significant contract extension with the Coyotes. 8-year contract, $57.2 million, an average annual value of $7.15 million. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Saturday morning. I got to tell you guys, this contract to me, the timing of it is what I find to be bizarre. You know, Clayton Keller is a former top 10 pick. He's a very good hockey player. But he's coming off a year in which he had 18 fewer points than his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
Same number of games. You know, 9 fewer goals, 9 fewer assists than his rookie season.
He never misses games.
He hasn't missed a game in his NHL career. I just don't quite understand what the urgency was to pay him for the year he had in his rookie year when he's coming off of a worse sophomore year. Why not wait 30 games, 40 games, 50 games, maybe the entire season, and then see, after a third year of body to evaluate, what you want to pay Clayton Keller? I don't understand the urgency to have done it right now.
Right, and you've made that point many times over the year, and it's a very valid argument, Drew, right? Because, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, wouldn't you want to sign a contract when your stock is the highest, right? That's kind of essentially your point.
No, from Keller's perspective, I think he got a lot of money.
No, but you're saying why didn't he wait to sign the contract?
No, I meant the Coyotes, because he's coming off of a down season. Why not wait? If he puts up another 45-point year, he wouldn't make $7+ million. Now, maybe they think that last year was the aberration, but now, why not wait and see? At the end of the season, he's an RFA with no arbitration rights. He's in the same boat as Connor and Laine.
But aren't you going to just have to, if Keller puts up 70 points, which he could.
If he puts up 70 points, then how much more than $7.15 million per season are you going to have to pay him?
I don't think you're going to have to pay him much more than that. I think the contract that they signed is his ceiling. Like, if you look at comparables, like, if Clayton Keller is going to get $7.1 million,
yeah.
I mean, Connor's got to be, if not right there, a little bit more. Like, you could make an argument that based on Connor's numbers, he should be around 7.5, maybe 8.
Yes, Kyle Connor has to love this contract. I don't see any. I think Kyle Connor sits back and says, "Whoa, this guy, you know, he had 47 points last year. My numbers are better than his across the board. My numbers, my goal, my points per 60, my goals 4.6 per 60. All of my numbers are better than Clayton Keller's. So this is the absolute baseline for my contract." From the Coyotes' perspective and the John Chayka perspective, I'm just not certain why they signed him to this contract right now. Why not wait the other year? Why not wait part of this year and see what you have before you commit to a guy coming off of a down season?
Yeah, and it's funny that you bring up Kyle Connor. No, and you're right. I can't disagree with you, Drew, because when I saw that contract, I wasn't surprised. And the reality is, guys, a team like the Coyotes, right, who is desperate to get into the playoffs, and they actually came pretty darn close last year. But when you're talking
in an injury riddled season,
right,
and I think they're going to be a better team this year with Phil Kessel now there than they were last year.
Well, what about just health in general? I mean, like the Coyotes, I don't know, you know, if they were top 5 in the NHL when it came to man games lost, but they were just completely riddled with injuries last year, right? And Clayton Keller was
the only guy who was healthy the whole season.
Yeah, and I mean, Antti Raanta was obviously, you know, one of the big ones there that he was injured, right? But when you talk about you know, Kyle Connor. I also think, you know, in Montreal, Max Domi, you know, speaking of former Arizona Coyotes players, he's got 1 year left on his contract. And, you know, you're probably looking at that contract and you're saying, well, if Clayton Keller is getting, you know, $7.15 million, then I'm probably, you know, due for a nice little raise. I'll be around $7.5 million probably. So I think there are a lot of RFAs that are probably looking at that contract, or pending RFAs, I should say, that are looking at that contract and they're saying, okay, you know, Keller didn't have his best offensive year. As you said, Drew, what did he go down? 17 points from year over year?
That's why I just don't understand it, from why John Chayka is running to sign him to this deal, Dave.
I think it's probably a lot to do with the fact that the Coyotes don't have that many naturally gifted offensive players.
Going anywhere.
He's not.
He's an RFA next at the end of the year with no arbitration rights. I mean, you have leverage.
I think you sign him because you think if he has a breakout offensive year, which he could, then you're maybe going to have to pay him a little bit more.
Well, why not wait and see? And if he breaks out, so be it. So you have to pay him seven.
No, I agree with you.
You have to pay him $8 million instead of $7.15
million. I'm just trying to get inside
his
head. I'm trying to, you know, you asked the question, so I'm just trying to, you know, come up with a possible answer. He's thinking, well, you know, if Keller, like I said, I don't think Keller's going to get 90 points this year, but he could get 70.
So if he gets 70, you pay him $700,000 more than you signed him for. But if he only gets another 47 points or 50 points.
It looks like an overpay.
It looks like an overpay. I just don't understand. This is an, I mean, GMs.
He'll have much more than 47 points next year.
You would think so, but why not wait and see? What's your urgency, Dave?
I think it's a fair question.
It's money. It's a question of money. You're trying to save. You said $700,000 or whatever it is. And again, I didn't sign him to a contract, Drew. I know you're getting worked
up
here.
I'm not getting worked up, but I just don't understand the general manager's logic here.
Well, is there any other? Like, I mean, I gave you what I think was the explanation. I can't think of anything else.
I mean, I think the reality is that Sebastian Aho's contract at what, $8.54 million or whatever for the 5 years, you know, that he got with Carolina. Through the offer sheet, I think like that probably set the high mark for a lot of these guys. They're probably upset. Now they see this come in and they're thinking to themselves, okay, well, this helps at least. This gives us the low point for a number of us, including, as you just mentioned, Drew, Kyle Connor. As to why they would do it, the only thing I can think of is that you just want that cost certainty. And again, I don't know why you would need to necessarily do it now. You know, you've got, like you said, you've got Clayton Keller signed to $885,000 for next season.
Entry-level contract.
So he's yours.
For the rest of this year.
And again, there's no arbitration rights next season.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat inexplicable in that sense because, you know, you don't really need to. But again, from their perspective, and he for the record, now will become your highest played player. Mm-hmm. You know, after him, it goes Kessel, Stepan, Schmaltz. So, I mean, like...
Yeah, but shouldn't he be your highest paid... Like, that's my point here. And I'm, again, Drew, stop thinking that I'm... I already said I agree with you. I don't know how many times I can say that, but...
Without getting sick.
Let's be honest. We all kind of think Keller got overpaid a little bit and he signed the contract too early. But when you're talking with this Coyotes team, you just don't have that many talented offensive players. So I think that has to factor into it. You know, obviously, Phil Kessel is going to make them better offensively. But, you know, Derek Stepan is making $6.5 million, and all due respect to Stepan, he's not the same player that he once was. He's taken a step back. You know, he's a good, solid two-way centerman. But, you know, when you go up and down the list, like Carl Soderberg, Christian Dvorak, I mean, the Coyotes are desperate to get back into the playoffs and you know, have the goals that Clayton Keller provides. So, again, I agree. Maybe they could have waited. You know, maybe they overpaid him a little bit, but, you know, it is what it is.
When we come back, Kat Silverman of The Athletic is going to join us. She covers the Arizona Coyotes. But before we go, breaking NFL news, the Antonio Brown saga has come to an end as it pertains to the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders have released wide receiver Antonio Brown. If you're just joining us, Brown, with some controversial Instagram posts, he requested his release from the team in an additional Instagram post and YouTube posts late last night and this morning. The Oakland Raiders have abided by that. Antonio Brown, all-world wide receiver, has been released by the Oakland Raiders.
Is that a surprise? Like, I don't follow the NFL as much as you do. So
The entire saga of the Raiders and Antonio Brown over the past week has been an absolute.
Was his last game in Winnipeg?
He didn't play in Winnipeg.
Oh, he didn't play.
But he has not played a game for the Oakland Raiders since they acquired him from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He missed the entire preseason, and now he won't play in the regular season.
For those questioning, this is now the illegal procedure football show.
There you go. It just absolute drama surrounding Antonio Brown. The Oakland Raiders have released him. where it's going to go next, we shall see. We're going to head to Arizona. Kat Silverman covers the Coyotes. She joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. It's brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, international comedian superstar Sugar Sammy is at the club. Tickets available for the 7 o'clock and the 9:45 p.m. show. They're going quickly, so get them now at Rumors Comedy Club. Rumors Comedy Club, easy for me to say, .com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the North State Journal, he covers the Carolina Hurricanes. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Corey Lavalette. Corey, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Hope all is well with you.
All is well. We've had a nice off season, training camp right around the corner, Corey, and the Carolina Hurricanes got the last big fish on the free agent market, signing Jake Gardner to what looks like a very team-friendly four-year contract. From your perspective there in Carolina, Corey, you know, how does Gardner fit in on that Hurricanes defense, a defense, that I might add, that is quite loaded with talent?
Yeah, I mean, first off, you're totally right about the team-friendly aspect of this. What I wrote yesterday was, you know, this is a team that for a lot of years under previous ownership spent a lot of time this time of year picking guys off the pile to fill out their roster, and the fact they're able to add a guy like Jake Gardner, and even Ryan Dzingel came in a couple weeks after July 1st, to get these guys on maybe deals that people expected them to make more money is huge. I mean, he fits right in the top four, I think, but it obviously creates a logjam. They had a little bit of imbalance last year. They had Brett Pesce playing in his offside, and he was great. He was great on the left, but when you add a guy like Gardner, now you kind of start to see, well, this might be a little bit jammed up compared to what it was last year with Calvin DeHaan. DeHaan was great in a fourth line role, I mean a third pairing role, but you know, I think Jake needs to play with skill guys to use his talents best. So I think he slides in there. Maybe he plays with Brett Pesce, and you know, I think, you know, Slavin and Dougie Hamilton played together quite a bit last year. That seems like a pretty good combination on the first pairing. So that makes you start to wonder what happens with a guy like Justin Falk or maybe even Trevor Van Riemsdyk. But Falk's the guy who makes more money, and it makes you wonder. There's been rumors for, it seems like forever, that Justin could go somewhere, and that this certainly won't slow those down, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Corey, you mentioned that the Hurricanes might move out a defenseman, and, you know, they're one of five teams right now that are right at the salary cap ceiling at $81.5 million. So, in your opinion, does that make the most sense because Justin Falk has 1 year left on his contract, or does Don Waddell maybe move out a younger defenseman, maybe a Hayden Fleury?
I mean, I guess that's certainly possible. While they're right up against the cap, there is some maneuvering they can do. I think pretty much all of us use cap friendly to kind of gauge where things are. And right now they've got, you know, two extra forwards, two extra D, plus both of those higher priced goalies with Mrazek and Reimer. And there's no guarantee that's what the roster is going to look like. Certainly they won't be carrying two extra defensemen and two extra forwards on opening night. So I think I think they surprised us in the past by doing things like keeping Michael Ferland and just running out the contract. And there, you know, as long as Justin Falk or one of those guys who deserve to be top four guys is okay playing on the third pairing, then maybe they will keep them all. Like you mentioned, Hayden Fleury's on a one-way deal this year for the first time. So with that said, you know, if he's going to, they're not going to put him on waivers. He'd get claimed pretty quickly. So they could keep him up as the number seven guy and have him not playing. That's not what they prefer to do with young guys. And then there's other guys behind him too that are close. Jake Bean's close. Chase Prisky was a big signing this offseason out of Quinnipiac. And Jesper Sellgren's a guy that I don't think he's close to being an NHLer yet, but they're pretty happy with his progress and where he is. So there could be a move that could be one of the bigger names. Like you said, it could be a guy like Fleury, but He's just going to have to kind of wait and see how it shakes out and maybe what they need to get back. Do they feel like they need to replace Justin Williams' points, or do they feel like the young guys that they've added and, Martin Natchez and will Svechnikov take another step? And I mentioned Dzingel, Eric Halla. Will those guys bring enough offense to replace that? So lots of moving parts here.
Well, Corey, 5 days ago, the Carolina Hurricanes put out what I thought was a very interesting tweet. Justin Williams has announced that he's taking a break from the NHL. He will not join the team at the start of the 2019-20 season, which leads into my question to you. What are the odds that you place that Justin Williams is retired, or do you see him playing at some role, almost like what Mike Fisher did with the Predators, coming back at some point this season and playing with the Carolina Hurricanes?
You know, we had media day on Wednesday, and if you had asked me this on Tuesday, I probably would have said that he would do the Mike Fisher thing and come back. My gut feeling now, after hearing Rod Brind'Amour talk about it, is I don't know that he's going to come back. I think this could be it. It could just be, Rod mentioned this, Justin, if he has a change of heart, doesn't want to be that guy who retires and comes back, which is why he left this door open a little bit. But the way Rod talked about it, Justin's a guy who's got to be all in to do this. He's not the fastest guy. He's not the most skilled guy. He's a guy who does it on heart and effort. So the fact that he didn't know 100% that he wanted to do this is what led to that decision. Now comes, does 2 months down the road, is he itching to get back out there? 3 months. If he sees the team doing well and they're in a playoff position and the team's calling him and saying, hey, we're doing well, but we could still really use you, does that change his mind? I don't know, where this is going to lead. But like I said, if you had asked me Tuesday, I would have said, yeah, I bet you it's 50-50. He comes back. After talking to Rod a little bit, I don't want to say it's 25-75, but I would almost lean more toward him not coming back.
Corey Lavalette of the North State Journal is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Corey covers the Carolina Hurricanes. Corey, it was about a month ago that Don Waddell sort of finally, signed a contract extension to remain as the general manager of the Hurricanes. But it was sort of a weird way that they got to this point where his contract had expired and there was some talk that he was maybe in the running for the Minnesota Wild job. And it seemed that there was, a genuine possibility that Waddell could have left the Hurricanes organization. How close did it get to that point, and why was there so much sort of drama surrounding this eventual extension?
I think that Tom Dundon's a misunderstood guy. What he says is what he means. So when he says that, Don had the opportunity to go and hear from someone else and he wants him to because he wants what's best for Don, I think he really means that. And if Minnesota had offered Don what he wanted, maybe Don would have, done that. Now you look at the Wild's roster and you look at the Hurricanes roster and which situation would you rather be in? I think it's pretty clear, given that I think Minnesota has a pretty long rebuild in front of them and quite a few stumbling blocks to get that moving with some of those big deals with Parise and Suter and all that. But I think Tom looks at it as there's 31 of these jobs, 32 if we count Seattle, and everybody wants to have one. So that's kind of what happened in the initial search when Paul Fenton's name came up and Paul Fenton pulled out of it, and there were all these rumors about Tom not being willing to offer what other teams offer. And Tom's mindset, I think, is, hey, if we're going to, if you want to have one of these 31 jobs and this is your dream job, it shouldn't be a dream job because I pay you a ton of money to do it. Now, you're going to get a raise from being an assistant GM, but, his mindset is, unless you are bringing exponentially more than what the money is, there's no reason to do it, especially when they have this kind of brain trust setup with the way they make decisions. So, it could have come close, but I think Don is, pretty comfortable here. The way the situation is, it's not all on Don all the time to make the decisions. They've got a really good front office, a lot of really smart guys. And, so it's a weird situation. It's different. Tom said from the beginning it was going to be different, and he's true to his word.
Corey, you mentioned, the front office, and obviously it wasn't just a good year for the Carolina Hurricanes, but it was a great year for the Charlotte Checkers. I don't have to tell you that. And, you know, we know all about Morgan Geeky because he's obviously a good Manitoba boy, and, you know, Stelio Mateos, and he was a Brandon Wheat Kings product. But when you're talking about, you know, some of those players that are kind of just knocking at the door to play for the Hurricanes, is Martin Nekash the guy that for you is probably going to graduate and play a full-time role for the Hurricanes next year?
Yeah, and I think they expected that last year too. And they were smart in seeing that, that Marty wasn't ready yet. You know, they noticed through those first few games that it's a transition coming to North America, certainly a transition playing in the NHL. And so they were smart about it. But, you know, he was one of the guys at Media Day on Wednesday. So that I think that's pretty indicative of the fact that he's in the plans. He had a, like you mentioned, Charlotte. He had a great year in Charlotte. He wasn't the best player in Charlotte, but slowly progressed. He became a weapon on the power play, which I think Carolina needs. And, you know, the move to get Jake Gardner certainly speaks to that too. But, he's the big name, I think, that you'll see joining the lineup. I think I mentioned already, you know, Svechnikov, there'll be more expected of him. He came, you know, saw him on Wednesday, and he seems confident, good spirits, and his English has improved, and he seems ready to go. He's going to be a monster, I think, in the time, you know, in years to come. So they got that. And then, like, you know, I mentioned Jake Bean is a guy who's knocking on the door, and the defense is obviously cluttered right now, but injuries can happen, and, you know, Trevor Van Riemsdyk is a little up in the air, though it sounds like he'll be ready. So there's guys, and that's one thing that's impressive. And, you know, going back to the Minnesota thing is, you know, the Hurricanes aren't just in a window now to compete. They're in a window to compete with guys behind them that can make this a longer window than a lot of teams have.
You know, and Corey, you just touched on it with the Charlotte Checkers and how they were able to go last year to the Calder Cup and win for the first time. You got the Carolina Hurricanes going to the conference finals. The storm surge obviously had people talking throughout the league, not just in Carolina, but we talked about it at the playoffs a little bit, how the buzz was not only was it translating to people talking about the team, but people actually buying tickets. And I think the advanced ticket sales for this season were higher than they had been in years. So, has the buzz continued? I know, again, with the Charlotte Checkers doing what they did, and obviously with the Hurricanes, has that buzz continued throughout the summer and now into this to this present time?
Yeah, I think people are really excited. And, you know, it is the start of college football season here right now, so there is a bit about that. You know, there's been plenty going on with all that, especially at UNC with Mac Brown coming back. So that's been a big story locally. But the Hurricanes are at the forefront in the Triangle. I mean, people are talking about them. People are excited about it. It helps to have a guy like Rod be the one who led the team last year, because obviously there's lots of good memories from him as a player. So there's just a really good vibe. The fans here have always been really good. There's always been a really good core of fans. The problem is when you lose for 9 years, any market is going to struggle. And you've seen it all around the league. I mean, Colorado had how many years in a row of sellouts, and then obviously they had their struggles and the attendance started to dip. And it's different here. There's not a huge youth hockey movement here. Now it's growing. My son had evaluations last night, actually, for his first day of evaluations for hockey.
How did he do?
So, youth hockey is growing. He did great. He tore it up, to be honest.
proud daddy?
Yeah, he did well. So we're back out there again today, but he did a good job. But, it's not like there's college hockey here and you know, junior hockey and things like that. So, you know, it's not born and bred into families that hockey is the thing that you gravitate toward. You know, it's down here, it's basketball and it's college football. So winning is the first thing. And then, when they do that, you kind of get this college sports nexus of all these fans that come together, and it becomes a really, really interesting atmosphere, because you have fans that would normally root against each other, all rooting for one cause, and they bring that college sports atmosphere, and everybody knows about the tailgating and all that. So there's a lot of excitement, I think. I think people are going to be fired up for the start of the season, and the expectations weren't necessarily high last year, even though, you know, Rod was coming back and things like that, and there were some young guys that they were excited about, but with what happened at the end of last season with reaching the Eastern Conference Final and then the additions that were made, and then they're even still making additions as we speak with the Gardner thing. People are excited for sure.
Corey Lavallette covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the North State Journal. Corey, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Best of luck to your son as he continues with his hockey tryouts.
Yeah, we're excited for him. We're excited for the real deal, too. So enjoy the start of the preseason, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely, Corey. Thanks so much. When we come back, Andre Vasilevsky said the Tampa Bay Lightning got too comfortable, and that's why they weren't ready for their playoffs, leading to their sweep at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. We talk about Vasilevsky's comments next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Aside from the playoffs, you can throw that out. It's happy with the production you had this year?
Yeah, you know, the regular season wasn't bad. Yeah, losing the trophy is good too, but you know, the main goal is to win the Stanley Cup, and I won't be happy until I win it.
That's Tampa Bay Lightning goaltender Andre Vasilevsky earlier this summer talking about his personal accomplishments. Very impressive. You know, won the Vezina, had a great year in goal for the Lightning, signed a big contract extension. But earlier this week, he came out and said that the reason the Lightning lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets is that they got too comfortable ahead of the playoffs and they weren't ready for the playoffs. And that's what led to the sweep by the Blue Jackets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Let me ask you, Vasilevsky saying we got too comfortable, we weren't ready for the playoffs. Is that a condemnation of his coach, John Cooper, whose job it is to have the team ready?
No.
Or is that just a function
no,
of they were too good all year and then they couldn't? They just had a dip at the wrong time in their energy levels.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's condemnation of the coach. I think the reality is what you're responsible for your play on the ice. The coach can only do so much. He can try and adjust, obviously, in game. And that's, you know, one of the keys to being a good coach is recognizing, you know, patterns and being able to adjust to them accordingly. Having said that, though, at the end of the day, you have to be able to be ready to play that team. And I just don't think that Tampa Bay was ready to handle what Columbus brought at them. And you know, the truth is, he won't have to worry if they play Columbus this year that it'll be the same Columbus team. But
no Bobrovsky, no Panarin.
No, I think the reality is that he knew that as a team collectively, and we actually talked about this during the year about, you know, them being on cruise control and not having to really play for anything. And how is that going to translate, the idea of ramping it up? And I remember, I want to say a couple of years ago, I looked at what teams did in the last kind of 10 games and how that impacted, you know, whether they were able to challenge for the Stanley Cup, because I was curious to see if you needed to kind of get your game going.
Was there a correlation between end of season performance and playoff performance?
Right. And actually it's interesting. I think only with the Hawks and the Kings did it actually, like, it was interesting because their records were abysmal in the final 10 games and they still went on to win Stanley Cups, in their year. I don't remember specifically which year it was that they won, but the point is that it didn't necessarily correlate, but I think in Tampa's case, they really had nothing to play for because they were so far out ahead. And it doesn't mean that you don't have to play the games and still win the games, but the game, you know, they were really on cruise control from what? December?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't like they were, oh, this game is a must-win game. I'm not saying they didn't get up to play the Leafs or they didn't get up to play the Panthers or the Rangers. I'm just saying that, you know, that level of importance where you're a team like St. Louis that knows they need to win every single game just to be able to make it and get into the playoffs. Maybe that, you know, and we, you know, to use a quick AHL analogy, we saw that with the Moose last year. The Moose were dead last at Christmas, very similar to St. Louis, and they fell, you know, just shy of making the playoffs. And I think had that team made it to the playoffs, that's a dangerous team to play because they're firing on all cylinders. And they just ran out of gas. But the truth is, we saw it with St. Louis, and we don't always see it. But I just think from Tampa's perspective, I mean, as good as they were and as many weapons as they had, they just didn't have anything to fight for so long.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, you know, Tampa Bay is still an excellent team, right? And, you know, I like the Kevin Shattenkirk move. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, picking up Pat Maroon on a one-year deal. And Tampa Bay is going to be a really good team this year. They might even win the President's Trophy again. But you're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, they were cold at the wrong time. And at the end of the day, I mean, Nikita Kucherov didn't score a goal in three games. Braden Point and Steven Stamkos each had a goal. And I don't care what anybody says, but when you don't have Victor Hedman healthy, remember, he only played two games in that series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's one of the best defensemen in the league. And Vasilevsky wasn't good either. I seem to remember he let in five goals, I think, in game two. And I mean, he wasn't good in that series. So again, it's not all on Vasilevsky. But I mean, as a collective, you know, the Lightning were badly outplayed. It's not like the Columbus Blue Jackets just squeaked by them. They were, like, make no mistake, they were badly outplayed. And
it was a four-game sweep. And, there's no such thing as a fluky four-game sweep.
It wasn't fluky. And when you're talking about guys like, you know, Matt Duchene and Ryan Dzingel, Artemi Panarin, Bobrovsky, I mean, most of those guys, if not all of them, knew that they were gone. So they were motivated. And they went up against that Lightning team, and everybody was talking about how that Lightning team was the Stanley Cup favorite, Dave, right? And so I think they had a huge chip on their shoulder. So I mean, it's understandable that Vasilevsky's frustrated. It's understandable that, you know, the top guys like Stamkos, Kucherov, Point, Hedman, I mean, those guys weren't happy with the way their season finished. So, I mean, you know, it basically comes down to, you know, these guys are going to use that first round sweep as motivation this coming year. And, you know, hopefully when the playoffs come around, you know, next April, you know, they're going to be better prepared because, quite frankly, the Blue Jackets were more prepared in that series. They were the better team. On paper, of course, the Lightning are the better team. I mean, the Blue Jackets had Panarin, but, you know, they didn't have a Kucherov. They didn't have, you know, a Stamkos. Obviously, you know, Seth Jones is their version of Victor Hedman. But the reality is, I mean, on paper, the Lightning should have won that series.
You wonder if, in hindsight, did the Lightning maybe regret not bringing somebody in at the trade deadline last year to maybe just provide a little bit of an energy boost, to provide maybe just a different look to their lineup? I mean, when things are going so well, you say, well, why bother changing it? But you wonder if that maybe had them coasting and maybe a little laissez-faire eventually when the playoffs started, and that's what came back to bite them. But they certainly, you wouldn't expect focus and getting up for the playoffs to be an issue this coming season for a Lightning team, given the sour taste in their mouth after getting swept by the Blue Jackets in the first round.
And it'll be hard, right? Because you're thinking to yourself, you're already thinking playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't even played a preseason game yet, and you're already thinking about the playoffs.
Sound familiar, like the Jets entering last year?
That's what I mean. So, like, it'll be very interesting from that perspective how you can just be like, okay, we got to stay, you know, focused on one game at a time, as cliche as that sounds. And hopefully you don't have to hear that for 82 games for the Tampa media. But again, it is what's important, right? You can't look at the big picture. You just kind of have to focus on what's right in front of you.
Yeah, we focus one segment at a time here at the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We get our points in deep, and we make sure to keep things, keep our feet moving at all
times.
And
give 100%.
And give 110%, in fact.
Pucks in deep or points in deep?
Well, for us, it's points.
We don't have pucks. I meant points as in...
Well, you often will throw a puck at Ezzy mid-show.
I'd like to. I wish I could. I wish violence was permitted, because every now and then I think sometimes it's deserved. When we come back, now Kat Silverman is going to join us. She covers the Arizona Coyotes for The Athletic. She's going to join us next to talk about the Keller extension and more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose, Winnipeg Ice, news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From The Athletic, from In Goal Magazine, she does it all. Her name is Kat Silverman. Kat, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Brought you on to talk a little bit about the Arizona Coyotes. They made a big splash earlier this week in signing Clayton Keller to that 8-year contract extension. You know, from my perspective sitting here and you know, looking at the raw numbers for Clayton Keller last year, it seems like he took a step back from his great rookie season when he was a Calder Trophy nominee. So why were the Coyotes eager to complete this contract now, as opposed to maybe waiting midway through the season, at the end of the season, when he still would have been an RFA, to get the contract done?
I think a lot of it has to do with what we've been seeing this summer, pure and simple. We have, I think it's something like 15 or 20 RFAs that are still unsigned, and at least half of those are guys that are in that like 50 to 80 point range. I think a couple of them went above that this past year. And the team recognized that this past year for the Coyotes wasn't a super easy one. I think at one point all of their natural centers but Derek Stepan were out with injury, and so they were playing guys that were normally on the wing, rotating them in through center, just hoping they could win the draws. I think they had something like 10 of their starting lineup players were out with injury at the same time. And understandably, for a guy who's in his second pro season with Clayton Keller, he took a step back when that happened. You know, he kept changing line mates, he kept changing deployment, and it didn't break him entirely. He still finished with 47 points. That's not the worst performance he could have put up, but it certainly was a step back. And I think that knowing that Phil Kessel's coming in this year, Nick Schmaltz is going to be fully healthy and playing with them for the full season, not coming in mid-year, they were expecting him to take another big step forward. And they know that if he does that, looking at what's happening with the contract this summer, that could really burn them when it comes to trying to sign him to a team-friendly deal. So I think they're banking on, you know, if he ends up being that 50 to 60 point scorer over the next 8 years, which is how long the contract is, you know, that's a bit of an overpayment. What he ended up getting, I think it's $7.125 million per. It's a little steep for a guy who ends up in that 50 to 60 point range. But if he does take that step forward, it's going to look at the very least like a reasonable deal. And it could end up looking like a good deal if he takes a big step forward. So I think that they were hoping that at worst they were going to end up with a slight overpayment, but at best they're going to end up not being in a situation that Colorado's in right now, that Winnipeg's in, that Toronto's in. I believe Calgary's also dealing with it right now. So I think that they were really just hoping to avoid that.
Well, Kat, we want to talk to you more about the Arizona Coyotes because, of course, you live in Arizona and cover the Coyotes for The Athletic. But we got to ask you about the article that you had for In Goal magazine earlier this week. I think it was Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a really good article, and we're going to tweet it out. And for those who haven't read it, it's about Sergei Bobrovsky, and obviously everybody knows that Bobrovsky was the big free agent catch for the Panthers, signing that $70 million deal. But your article was more focused on when Bobrovsky had the injury problems back in 2015-16, specifically the groin injuries, and you talk about his relationship with Finnish trainers Sami Karjalainen and Hannu Nykvist, who run a company called, if I'm not mistaken, it's called Eye of the Goalie? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. So can you just talk about that article and how that really got Bobrovsky back to being an elite NHL goaltender?
Yeah, it's funny. This summer I went to the Goalie Guild. It's run by Justin Goldman. He held this big goaltending retreat in Breckenridge, Colorado at the start of the summer. And we had a bunch of international goalies come through, ended up talking with a bunch of them about the guys that they work with, the stuff that they do with their teams. And one of them reached out to me, I think it was like a week or two after we all left Breckenridge, and said that he worked with this trainer in Finland who had also been working with Bobrovsky doing injury prevention training, not just strength training, but injury prevention training, sort of working with what Sergei Bobrovsky's body is meant to do and helping him stay strong and helping him stay conditioned without dealing with these groin injuries that happen when you're a particularly agile wide butterfly style goalie like Bobrovsky is. And he said, you know, this trainer and Bobrovsky have been keeping things under wraps for the last couple of years. They really didn't want to shine too much of a spotlight on it while they were doing it. But now that he's a free agent, now that he's signing somewhere else, they kind of want to go public with it. Would you like to talk to them and see if that's a story that you want to do? So I spent the summer sort of getting to know what they did with him. And really it comes down to looking at what Bobrovsky's strengths are physically and biologically, looking at the parts of his body that are meant to be more flexible and maybe shouldn't focus as much on strength training, the parts of his body that maybe he does need to bulk up on a little bit more without focusing on just getting overall bulked up. And it's similar to what Adam Francilia did with Connor Hellebuyck. I know that Winnipeg fans are pretty familiar with having a physical trainer who works with your body's biomechanics to keep you healthy and keep you conditioned throughout the season. And that's kind of what these trainers did with Bobrovsky over in Finland. And so far, it seems to be working. We took a look at it, and he missed 6 weeks from December to January of 2015, or of 14-15, I believe. And then he missed December to January of 2015-16, and then missed another little group in there too. So he missed three big six-week chunks in a 13-month time span, all with groin injuries. And since then, he's missed three games with illness, like with the flu, and he missed one game with a lingering upper body, sort of, I think it was a shoulder thing that he was out for a game. And so it's clearly made a difference. And yeah, it was a ton of fun learning about it. And they just wanted to share it because that is becoming more of a thing now. That is what goalies are starting to realize they really need to do training wise is work with their bodies, not just blindly bulk up for the season or not just go down into the splits every time they can, trying to get more flexible. So,
you know, Kat, at what point do you know sticking with that idea of goaltenders, do you know what you have in a goalie? Because, for example, you know, Eric Comrie just signed his 2-year deal with the Jets today. He's played 4 years pro, only 5 games at the NHL. I think it's a bit of a cautionary tale when you look at someone like Jordan Binnington, who I think played 6 pro seasons before really getting his taste. He was behind Ville Husso in San Antonio as the backup, obviously, and then with Husso injured, he got the call up to St. Louis. And so, and then obviously we saw what he did. Not everybody's going to be Jordan Binnington, obviously. But how do you know, with goaltenders, at what point their AHL success will, like, how many games do they need in the NHL to be able to see if whether that could translate? Because obviously Comrie has been limited to just 5 games.
I think that's kind of tough. I wish there was a concrete answer there. I think a lot of it has to do with their consistency, not just looking at their overall stats, you know, looking at, oh, this guy had a 915 save percentage, or he had an 898, looking at how many games he played, looking at how many stretches he had poor games, and looking at the bounce back rate from that. I know that a couple of statisticians have started looking at that in the CHL, looking at how many games it takes when a goaltender starts playing poorly for them to get their numbers back up again. So looking at, you know, how many games in a row your prospect goalie is struggling before he gets himself back up to where he needs to be. Looking at how many games he plays in a row for your AHL team. And really, I think a lot of it does have to do with the coach getting a feel. You know, I think I know that we all want to be able to look at the numbers and determine, but I think that a lot of it has to do with what the goaltender himself is saying. If he believes in himself and if he has the confidence that he is at the right level, or if he has the confidence that moving up to the next level is what his game is ready for, I think that that has a lot to do with it, because goaltenders who still believe that they need significant chunks of development in their game before they reach the right level, I think it can be very easy to backslide. And so you need to see that the confidence is there, and not just in blanket interviews, but in what the coach sees during practice and what they say to their teammates. So it's tough, but I like Eric Comrie. That's to circle back to Winnipeg's most recent signing. I think he's a good goalie. And I think that maybe the team hasn't had the right opportunity for him to get a good look in the NHL yet. But I think that he's certainly capable of it. So if they needed to bring him up, I don't think he's all that far off.
Kat Silverman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Kat is with In Goal Magazine and The Athletic. And Kat, you had a great tweet, I thought, on your Twitter feed, at Kat M. Silverman, and I'll quote it. The NHL has a player who spent the summer in tie-dye hot shorts with a 70s porn star stash, and yet the most exciting marketing ploy they could come up with was a black and white headshot with the caption, quote, pucks in deep. I mean, it seems like it's another missed marketing opportunity by the NHL. This one is a player from a non-traditional hockey market playing in the biggest market in the NHL, and they somehow missed this layup. It's somewhat inexplicable, isn't it?
It's kind of funny, because I know that a lot of people pointed out, they said, well, this marketing strategy clearly got people talking about hockey again, so maybe that's what they meant to do. But I really don't think it was. I think that I don't know what they meant to do with their marketing, but I think that there's just too much of an attempt to please everyone with how they do their marketing. They try and keep things as bland as possible, and they try and keep all of the players in a very stereotypical hockey personality. Like, they try and help keep the NHL separate from the other major sports. And I certainly don't think that With all apologies to Antonio Brown for whatever he's going through. I don't think we need that in hockey right now, but there does seem to be a lack of embracing the players for their personalities and just letting, not necessarily trying to outweird each other, but just letting them have fun and and embracing it. I mean, like you said, there's Austin Matthews. He's from a non-traditional market. He spent the summer here in Arizona. He helped ASU reveal their new jerseys for this season. I thought that was incredibly cool, and the NHL really didn't capitalize on that too much. And he does. He has this crazy porn star mustache right now, and he seems to have kept it through Media Week.
Yeah, he's, Pablo Escobar.
He's doing all of his promos in it, which is, yeah, he looks like El Chapo. It's a little wild, but yeah, that's something that they're just completely glossing over. And I know that some of the guys that they used in their most recent promo are guys who maybe aren't as big of a name, and maybe they were trying to get some of the second-tier names. Like, I know Kotkaniemi is not a player that everybody is familiar with, so maybe they were trying to elevate those guys to the next level, but I think they missed the mark on how to do that. And it's a little disappointing, because there are so many fun players out there that they could be doing so much with, and they just seem to... they seem to miss the mark so frequently.
Yeah, I agree with that. Kat, last question for you here. And just to go back to goaltending, obviously, you know, it was a really tough year for Antti Raanta. We haven't seen him play in a regular season game for quite some time. And, you know, we have to give a shout out to Darcy Kuemper, who had just an unbelievable season for the Coyotes after, you know, we didn't really expect him to play anywhere close to that amount of games for the Coyotes. But even though you could say this about any team in the NHL, how important is Antti Raanta's health going to be for the Coyotes and their quest to get back into the playoffs?
I think it's going to be huge, because even if they manage to make it into the playoffs without him staying healthy, I think almost the bigger part isn't necessarily how important he is to getting into the playoffs, but how important he is to their playoff survival. Because we've seen, I mean, we really need to look no further than Toronto and Tampa Bay this past year. Those are two very strong teams that worked their starting goaltender, starting him just about every game they possibly could. And by the time the playoffs rolled around, they were exhausted. So I think that if they don't have a quality tandem to deploy this season in Darcy Kuemper and Antti Raanta, even if Kuemper manages to replicate his year from last year, he's not going to be in any kind of condition to be playing the playoffs. And that makes for an easy first round sweep. And that's not really what I think this team's goal is this year. So ultimately, I think Kuemper is capable of doing what he did last year. And I think that they have enough goaltending depth at this point that they could survive. They have Aiden Hill coming back. They have Erik Schallgren. He came over from Sweden. He did really well over there this past year. So they have reinforcements, but I don't think that they will be doing themselves any favors if Raanta can't stay healthy. And if he can't, I think they have to look at bringing someone else in moving forward. And I hate saying that. I think he's one of my favorites to watch, but I do think that if he can't stay healthy this year, they do need to consider looking somewhere else to bring someone in.
The Arizona Coyotes will be one of those fascinating teams in the Western Conference. Kat Silverman will be all over it for The Athletic and In Goal magazine as well. Kat, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. You too.
Take care. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk about the latest in the NHL, NHLPA, CBA conversations. I can't believe we're back onto that topic. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, it's too soon to say whether or not the Players Association will officially choose to not reopen the CBA on September 15th. Again, following in the step of the National Hockey League, who did so on September 1st. Now, the indications are that the PA will not reopen, but that's not definitive. It's not official yet by a long shot.
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger talking about the possibility that the collective bargaining agreement could possibly expire at the end of the season.
and the both sides would go back to the negotiation table. Right now, they're talking about potentially extending it. Right now, the NHLPA has until next Sunday to decide if they're going to reopen the CBA at season's end. If they choose not to, it'll automatically continue for a few more years, and we can kick the can down the road here. The NHL chose not to reopen it when they had the option on September 1st. The ball is now in the court of the NHLPA. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, one final segment here on TSN Radio 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Want to give a big shout out to our buddy Frank Zappia. His movie is being premiered in Winnipeg. Frank, if you didn't know, wasn't a filmmaker. He has produced a 3D independent feature. It's shot here in Manitoba. It's called Running Water. Tickets available now. It's going to be at Cinematheque on the 19th of September and the 21st of September. So good. Give a big shout out to our buddy Frank Zappia for getting his movie up and running, and it's going to be at Cinematheque, and we definitely encourage you to go check out Running Water, a rare 3D independent feature film shot here in Manitoba.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to go check that out, and we recommend all of our listeners go check that out, and it's going to be particularly interesting for me because earlier in the summer, we didn't have running water at our house in River Heights, so I'm really curious to see what this movie's all
it's
about. All,
it's a movie about plumbing. That's what it's about. It's a movie about plumbing. Anyways, that's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Mike McIntyre, David Alter, Corey Lavalette, and Kat Silverman. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to it. Get it sent to your device automatically. Rate and review us each and every week. Big thanks to producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. Big thanks to Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. And a big thanks, of course, to our sponsors, Linden Market Dental Center, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Reminder, Banjo Bowl coverage, blue and gold game day coming up in 1 hour time. Leave it locked and loaded here on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.